Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Time is 4:15, May 11th, 2023. You can tell it's the end of session because we've got substantial delays. Joining me this afternoon is Co-Chair Senator Hoffman, Co-Chair Senator Olson, Senator Bishop, Senator Wilson, Senator Merrick, Senator Keel. The schedule is in flux. We are going to take up the operating budget first, and then we're going to have a recess to the call of the chair, and then we'll come back. Senator Olson will take over. There's a committee substitute for Senate Bill 48, carbon offset programs on state land. Senate Bill 88, retirement systems defined benefit option, will be moved till tomorrow morning. So with that, Senator Hoffman, do I have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Senate Finance Committee adopt committee substitute for House Bill 39, version O, as our working document.
And I'll object for discussion and ask Mr. Eklund to come forward, please. We're going to walk through the changes. And just before you start, We'll walk through the changes on the committee substitute. We'll have the legislative finance director do a brief update on the fiscal position also before we take our recess. For those that are new watching this, as Mr. Eklund gets ready, he is the lead staff person for the operating budget for the Senate. Mr. Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Pete Eklund, staff to Senator Stedman in the Finance Committee, the Senate Finance Committee. What you have before you is House Bill 39, version O. It is now in an omnibus appropriation bill. The version in front of you has operating, capital, supplemental, and fiscal note items. Version O is a combination of HB 39 version P, which was the operating supplemental bill that was version P was adopted by this committee yesterday, and also SB 41, the capital budget version Y, which was adopted by the committee yesterday. So the new version O is a combination of those two budgets and with four changes, Mr. Chairman. And so you can see in the bullets on the screen and in document A in your packet. The first change is there was a late amendment that came in from OMB yesterday, and it's for $5 million of statutory designated program receipts. It's a capital amendment, and it's for reviewing of rate structures within the Medicaid program. The second change, Mr. Chairman, is there's now fiscal notes attached to the bill. And so the fiscal notes that are attached are legislation that's already passed the legislature or that is possible to pass the legislature. And Mr. Chairman,
stop there for a minute. Sure. We'll have brief eddies. Let's go. On the record, sorry for the delay. We just wanted to get the screen at full size for the audience. Mr. Eklund.
So, Mr. Chairman, there are fiscal notes attached to the bill. As people review the bill, if we've missed a piece of legislation that people believe may pass, that can still be added, Mr. Chairman. The third bullet, Mr. Chairman, is there's now a $40 million appropriation that would backfill costs associated should there be a government shutdown, Mr. Chairman. Typically what's happened in the past when there's been either the threat of a shutdown, people may cash out leave or they may use health insurance at a greater rate. And so, Mr. Chairman, should a shutdown occur, which hopefully does not, there is a $40 million appropriation that would backfill some of those costs. And lastly, Mr. Chairman, what we refer to the waterfall, that's been changed in version O, the version in front of you. So, Mr. Chairman, between the capital and operating budgets for FY24, the version of the bill in front of you lives within the revenue that's expected from the spring revenue forecast. And, Mr. Chairman, you can see that on line one of the little chart in front of you. Is the spring revenue forecast estimated or projected to be a $43 or $73 price per barrel of oil, or roughly $6.2 billion of revenue. So, Mr. Chairman, in the event that revenues are above $73 a barrel, the next $636 million, if the price of oil was roughly $83 a barrel for the year instead of $73, $636 million would go to the CVR. Then beyond that, Mr. Chairman, if revenues were even higher, the next tranche of that would be filled was between $83 and $105, roughly $1.7 billion. That revenue would be split evenly between the Constitutional Budget Reserve and the Dividend Fund for an FY25 energy relief payment, and up to, Mr. Chairman, $881.5 million, roughly what is the same amount of as a 75-25 dividend. Then lastly, Mr. Chairman, if oil is even higher than $105, anything above that would go into the CBR also. So, Mr. Chairman, those are the changes to the bill.
Do you have a question, Senator Merrick?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Eklund, should we raise revenue with one of the other revenue measures, that the legislature is considering? Does this have anything to do with that, or is this specifically price of oil?
Through the chair, Senator Merrick, if we did pass other revenue measures, it would have an impact because it's basically, if you look at item one, number one here, any revenue above $6,264,300,000, whether you pass a new revenue measure or it's oil, any revenue above that amount would then go to the CBR first.
Thank you.
And the reason it is written like that, it was too difficult to do it on the oil price trigger, oil price itself. It was set on the dollars in combination, backing into the oil price, because it has to go on total revenue so we can keep track of it.
If I might add, Mr. Sherman, and so just to add on to that, so on lines two, three, and four, when we say between oil price between 73 and 80, those are just estimates, Mr. Chairman. So,
okay, I'll go ahead and remove my objection for the adoption of the version O as our working document. Do we have further objection to the adoption of version O as our working document? Seeing none, version O is our working document. Do we have questions, Senator Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Eklund, can you just talk to us a little bit about that $40 million price tag? Were there to be a potential government shutdown? What's the elements of that?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, Office of Management and Budget would be better to talk about it. But from what I understand, in the past, when there's been threats of a government shutdown, oftentimes people will either use health insurance at a higher rate than they would have otherwise. They may cash out leave. If there are furloughs, they may cash out leave. And there is, as checked with the OMB director prior to the meeting, there's over $212 million of leave on the balance sheets that people could cash out if there happened to be a government shutdown. And also, Mr. Chairman, of course, nobody wants a government shutdown, but even if and when the legislature passes an appropriation bill, if the effective dates fail, Mr. Chairman, the governor last year interpreted that failure of an effective date to cause the appropriation bill not to take effect for 90 days, which could perhaps go beyond July 1st. So just something to be aware of, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, that could incur a bunch of costs also. Any other questions before we bring up the OMB, or not OMB, but Ledge Finance? Okay, thank you, Mr. Eklund. If we could have Mr. Painter update the fiscal picture, which changes every day, it seems like, as we work through the process and count up fiscal notes and refine the budget numbers. So these numbers will be slightly different than where we left yesterday, with some additions, and he'll point that stuff out here shortly. Mr. Painter.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. We're going to document C. Document B, for the record, is the details of the fiscal notes that were included in this bill. And I just have one number on this, so I'll reference that document. But so this is an update from what I presented yesterday. So the revenue numbers have not changed from yesterday through line four. There's $6,264.3 million in available revenue. The agency operations, not including that $40 million appropriation that Mr. Eklund just spoke about, are in line five. That does include the $174.9 million for K-12 that's outside the formula. I would note that the fiscal note for that bill, SB 52, is also included in the fiscal note packet. However, since the outside the formula funding only takes effect if that bill does not take effect, we don't need to count it twice. We chose to count on line 5 rather than line 11, but in reality it would be one of the two depending on whether the bill passes or not. Line 6, statewide items, again, has not changed. Line 7, the capital budget and mental health capital, is still $356.9 million. The one amendment that was incorporated in the capital budget was not unrestricted general funds, so it doesn't factor in here. Then the permanent fund dividend, again, has not changed. That leaves us on line 10 with a surplus of $132 million before considering fiscal notes and other items. Line 11, the fiscal notes included in this legislation, again, not including the BSA increase in Senate Bill 52, total $19.5 million. That's a little bit lower than the number I presented yesterday. This is the ones that are included in this bill. Yesterday's number was a bit wider to anything that potentially could pass, but this is a little narrowed down given the few days left in session. The potential conference committee adds has been reduced to $14.6 million. In the third committee substitute, there were two additions that in this bill that were also in the House bill, $5 million for Head Start and then $3 million for AGDC. Removing those two from potential conference committee adds reduces that potential if the higher item is taken for both budgets. So the potential additions here, or actual additions in the case of the fiscal notes, were $34.1 million, leaving a potential surplus of $97.9 million at the $73 oil level. If there's a government shutdown and that $40 million is contingent on no appropriation bill being in effect on July 1st, that $40 million only goes out if there actually is a government shutdown, that would reduce the $97.9 million to $57.9 million if that appropriation is actually used. If not, there would be nearly $100 million available for capital budget increase, future supplementals, or a cushion for lower oil prices.
Okay, we have questions from committeemen. Okay, thank you, Mr. Painter, for coming forward. We're now going to take roughly about a half hour break, and we're going to we have a press availability to deal with, and we'll come back up here for a brief time to look at adopting another committee substitute for the carbon bill. We are at recess.
Call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order, back to order. It's 5:10 p.m. We've got one bill on the agenda today. That's Senate Bill 48 by the governor. Senate Bill 48 is a carbon offset bill. It was first heard on May 8th. We took public testimony. We've requested amendments. Most have been incorporated into the committee substitute. And so we'll have an ad easier. Call the Senate Committee, Senate Finance Committee back to order. We have a CS that has been put together. Do we have a motion, Mr. Senator Stubman?
I move that. Do we have a brief at ease?
At ease. Call the Senate Finance Committee back to Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that we adopt Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 48, Work Order 33 GS 1372 / whatever number it is.
/ U.
U.
/ U. As our working document.
Mr. Alpert, please come on and explain the changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. It's been a long day already. For the record, my name is Ken Alper, staff to the Senate Finance Committee, and like I did with the last CS, confirming that members have before them both the U version of the bill, which was distributed earlier today, and this summary of changes one-page document for Senate Bill 48. There's a lot of technical changes in this bill. It's relatively long. We worked very closely, Mr. Chairman, with both the agency, Department of Natural Resources, as well as members of the Resources Committee that heard it. There were a number of amendments made in that committee that were needed to get revised and refined and worked out. I think that we've made changes to everyone's satisfaction. So what you have before you is more of a thematized summary of changes that I'll work through, and we could go at the line level tomorrow if necessary. I've prepared a red blue line version of the bill to show detailed changes if the committee requires that. So the first change, this is the Finance Committee, and we want to concern ourselves with the budgetary aspects. The bill, as presented to us, created a separate carbon offset revenue fund that had certain restrictions to it. We've taken that part out of the bill. Carbon revenues will be assumed to be general fund, at least for now, but they will be separately accounted for and may be used by the legislature to make appropriations to support the carbon programs as they move forward and develop. There was originally in the bill, Mr. Chairman, a blanket waiver to the procurement code. We no longer have that. The program will operate within the bounds of the Alaska procurement code for most contracting. The exception is the contracts with the so-called registries. These are the nonprofit entities that create and certify the carbon credits that have certain unique protocols that we have to sort of seek out the right registry. So therefore, we have a waiver from the procurement code specifically tied to our contracts with a registry. In the sections, we've also clarified a cap on commissions to contractors we might hire to manage these programs for us. They won't get more than 30% of the revenue through their commissions. The third change is the idea of solicitation of competitive interest. This is the so-called leasing track. The bill provides for the opportunity for someone to come to the state and say, I would like to lease this tract of state-owned land, generally a forest, for a carbon project. We, if that happens, DNR is now mandated to go solicit competing proposals to say, just to make sure that we make the best deal possible. There will be public notice, a solicitation of competing bids, and a best interest finding before any carbon management leases are offered. And when looking at these proposals, in addition to whatever technical concerns they may have, the fourth change is the revenue potential to the state. The so-called monetary terms must be a core component of what is being considered when looking at competing proposals. There was some changes made about other resources. There's always the concern that we heard from some of the public testimony. We're not looking, and DNR is not looking, to lock up state land and prevent other uses. So any carbon projects must consider the potential impacts to mining, timber, and other resource industries. And likewise, any state land used in a carbon project must remain open for mineral exploration. There was an addition made. This is a little bit different, what's called Class 6 well primacy. This is not so much germane to carbon offset tree bills, but to the governor's other carbon bill, the so-called carbon injection, carbon sequestration bill, requires AOGCC to take control of certain types of injection wells, That's a multi-year regulatory process. So by putting it in this bill, it enables AOGCC to begin that process now and get the ball rolling. And part of the reason for that, Mr. Chairman, is that will enable the federal tax credits, the so-called 45Q credits that are the big sweetener from the federal government attached to a lot of these future carbon injection projects. It'll make us closer to the timeline where project proponents will be able to collect those credits if the state takes primacy on these what's called Class 6 injection wells. There are also, Mr. Chairman, a number of technical changes. There are some words in there that are very specific to the current state of the industry, which is rapidly developing. Words like validate and verify and different provisions that a registry has to hold were taken and made a little bit more neutral. This was all at the request of DNR themselves because they felt that it might be a few years before these projects mature, and we wanted to make sure the language wasn't too constraining in how we establish our relationships with these carbon management entities elsewhere in the world. And that's it. That is the U version of Senate Bill 48 that you have before you, and I'm happy to take any questions or stand down.
Do we have any questions by members of the committee, Finance Committee, for Mr. Alpers? If not, at this time we'll have Rena Miller and newly confirmed Commissioner John Boyles come on up and comment on their perspective of the committee substitute.
Yeah, good evening, Chair Olson, members of the committee. This is John Boyle, Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, for the record. The department is continuing to look through the committee substitute in detail, and we just wanted to express our appreciation to the committee and particularly the committee staff that worked so hard to get this committee substitute out in a timely way. So we look forward to reviewing it and continuing our dialogue.
Ms. Miller?
I have nothing to add, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. We will take up the remaining amendments for tomorrow afternoon.
Thank you, Cadiz.
Call the Senate Finance Committee meeting back to order. So with that, I remove my objection. We'll set this bill aside and then be ready for it tomorrow afternoon. Thank you very much. We're adjourned at 5:20.